I'm Chris Dengate.
And I'm Flint Duxfield. And this is The Signal. Donald Trump has taken the nuclear option.
I am announcing today that the United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal.
And with growing fears over oil supplies, will Australia soon be running on empty?
We've got a security situation around the world that's deteriorating. In the event of a major disruption, we haven't got a plan B. That's pretty bad.
Only a few weeks of fuel left. That's today's Signal.
Anytime there's a crisis in an oil-producing country, particularly in the Middle East, people start talking about a looming global oil crisis, right?
It does sound pretty alarmist, but for Australia, the threat is quite real because our stocks at the moment are actually at staggeringly low levels. Some reports put our crude oil reserves at about 20 days, and that's why this situation in Iran is making people very nervous.
So we are going to get to Australia's oil problems in a bit, but first, what is the situation with Iran?
I think it's going to go down as one of the worst.
One of the worst.
Worst. Terrible.
Bad deal.
A horrible and laughable. A disastrous deal with Iran.
In a few moments, I will sign a presidential memorandum to begin reinstating U.S. nuclear sanctions on the Iranian regime.
So we can't say we didn't see this coming. Donald Trump has been talking about this stuff since his election campaign in 2016. But tell me, Flint, exactly what is this deal that he's ditched?
Right. So it's called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA.
That's a catchy title.
I know. They always pick the best ones. It was basically set up by Obama and all the major powers in 2015. They agreed that they would remove sanctions on Iran if it agreed to tone down its nuclear program.
Okay. Tone down. Right. Not get rid of.
Not get rid of it, no. And Ben Rich from Curtin Uni says that anyone who thought it was meant to get rid of the program altogether has really got the whole point of it wrong.
The objective of the actual JCPOA wasn't to halt the Iranian nuclear program entirely. What it was to do was to essentially extend the breakout capacity of the Iranians and their ability to achieve a nuclear weapon. So when the deal was signed, it was sort of estimated that it would have taken around 3 months or so for the Iranians to produce a nuclear weapon if they'd committed to that goal. Under the JCPOA, that window has extended out to 12 months and has also been buffered by things like increasing international observers in the major Iranian nuclear reactor that would have been capable of producing these materials.
Okay, 12 months doesn't sound like a very long time. I mean, maybe Donald Trump has a bit of a point here. Maybe this isn't a great deal after all.
Well, there was a few more points to it than that. But he wasn't the only one who was unhappy with it. Israel and Saudi Arabia also thought it was a dud deal.
For both Israel and Saudi Arabia, who view Iran as an existential threat, the deal under Obama was never considered to be sufficient in terms of achieving their goals of national security. They viewed it as sort of a halfway measure. Their view was that they wanted to have either the entire Iranian nuclear program, be it the military or civilian components of that, dismantled entirely, as well as dealing with other issues like the Iranian ballistic missile program, which is its own issue, or the Iranian influence and interference in other states throughout the region, such as what we see today in Syria, Yemen and Iraq.
So far, Iran has said it is planning on sticking with the agreement, even though the US has pulled out, but it still wants to talk to the European countries, and it is ready to restart its nuclear program if it needs to.
Okay, so if they do that, how long could it be before Iran can make a nuke?
A lot of their technology that they could use to sort of achieve that three-month window was just basically put into storage. They can pull out the centrifuges, and quite quickly they can rebuild that capacity to develop a nuclear weapon within 3 months. And then
3 months?
Back to the pre-standards.
Wow.
And then even work on making that a smaller window. You could theoretically get it down to a few weeks. But at the moment, it's the three-month window that will likely become quite apparent in a fairly short order if they don't continue to adhere to the agreement. This does not necessarily mean they are not going to adhere to the agreement. It actually might be in their interests to continue to observe the terms of that, because then that actually allows them to maintain their status in the agreement and maintain those relationships and the sanctions relief with the European states in particular.
And Trump is now saying that a new deal needs negotiating. But what does pulling out of this deal do to Trump's chances of securing a deal with Iran, or for that matter, any other country which might be a bit wary of the US?
Well, that's just, in the case of Iran, it's just dead on arrival. I mean, the sort of the Herculean effort that was required to negotiate the JCPOA was just intense. And all the United States is going to do, you know, by pulling out of it is just demonstrate that it's a bad actor. It's not. It's welching on the bargain, while the Iranians had, by and large, as far as we know, maintained all their requirements in that agreement. If we look at, you know, what's going to happen now with negotiations, the other crisis sort of actor in relation to nuclear weapons, North Korea, all this is going to do is undermine U.S. credibility in those types of negotiations going forward. Because if, you know, they push to make this type of agreement and then just welch on it whenever they feel like it, well, there's no confidence you can rely on them for future efforts.
So there's this threat of a nuclear Iran, which is sounding pretty scary, but back at home we've got what's probably a more pressing problem for most Australians, which is the threat of a possible shortage of oil. And like we were saying at the start, any turmoil in an oil-producing country or region like the Middle East could cause a massive disruption to global supplies.
And that's a really big issue for Australia, because only in the last few weeks we've been told that our fuel stocks are so low that the government has ordered a review. The Energy Minister, Josh Frydenberg, says it's the prudent and proper thing to do. And, you know, the government isn't going to be complacent about this.
When the minister says, you know, we don't want to be complacent, well, we have been. We have been incredibly complacent.
That's Professor Samantha Hepburn from Deakin Energy. She's wondering why we need a review at all.
Is there really anything that he shouldn't know already that this review might uncover?
Exactly. Why do we need a review? It's pretty clear what's happening right now. I mean, right now, we are well under our obligations to stockpile for 90 days. And if we are in contravention of our International Energy Agency recommendations, then we don't need a review to find out that that's an issue.
And why is there that 90-day requirement from the International Energy Association?
And it's a very interesting requirement, because the International Energy Agency have done a lot of analytics. You know, they've looked at the whole issue of what would happen if there was a disruption, how much stockpiling is required, what's the basic requirement that you would need to deal with at a domestic level that level of disruption. And 90 days is a very specific requirement, and that's what they've mandated. Now, that's just the minimum requirement. The whole idea is that you're planning for remote possibilities. Now, the concern I have with this is that we don't seem to understand what energy security policy really means.
This is basically an insurance plan if there was an oil crisis, an insurance plan which Samantha Hepburn says we really need, because Australia imports 90% of its fuel. It comes mostly from Saudi Arabia, and then it's refined mostly in Singapore and then heads down to us.
In essence, we get fuel from Singapore and they get it from the Middle East. If there's any blockage, any issue in those straits, and they might be patrolled by the United States, but if there is any issue, we've got a concern. And so decisions that are made in that region will affect us. And we don't have any fallback. I mean, you know, stockpile isn't the solution, obviously, but it's important to have a strategic measure in place should there be some sort of crisis.
And there are a lot of observers who have been warning about this for years, including Air Vice Marshal John Blackburn. He's an expert in strategic policy and planning.
The whole Middle East area is pretty unstable. Got Iran, we're potentially now going to go back into its nuclear weapons program that America said, you know, they're not going to keep their agreements with them. Saudi Arabia is talking about getting nuclear weapons. The other thing is that the South China Sea is an area of concern, with the militarization of the islands up there that China's been developing. And people are concerned about what would happen in the future if there was a military conflict around the South China Sea. But the analysis of the risks to that supply chain, in other words, could something interrupt that flow of oil and fuel to Australia? Well, the analysis that's being done on that is really basic, and it doesn't take into account the reality of the world we live in today.
And it's not really any surprise the experts are alarmed by this when you look at the stats on our fuel stocks.
Yeah.
The most recent report on this says we have 22 days worth of crude oil, 59 of LPG, 20 days of petrol and 21 days of diesel.
Yeah, but John Blackburn reckons it could actually be a lot less than that.
What we have seen when there's been a problem like a refinery problem in 2014 down in Victoria, we started to run out of fuel like diesel within 2 to 3 days. Same thing when we've had a fuel supply interruption in Perth, they started to run out of diesel in 2 days. So once you run out of that, people probably don't appreciate our whole distribution system of food and fuel itself, pharmaceuticals, everything we need for day-to-day life pretty much relies on diesel. So if you start to run out of diesel, you can go down to the supermarket, after a couple of days, they're going to be having problems getting food there. You go to the chemist, after a couple of days, you could be having a problem getting, you know, critical pharmaceuticals or medicines. So whilst you could say we don't have 12, 15 days, if things start to go wrong, you know, some people will start panic buying, it'll go wrong in areas, some areas before others, because it's not, an, you know, 12, it's not 12 or 15 days everywhere, it varies.
That sounds pretty dire.
Yeah, but the most concerning thing for John Blackburn is that there's really no plan B.
The International Energy Agency said, in the event of a major disruption, the ones I'm talking about happening, they can't see what plan Australia has to deal with it. And because we're so dependent upon this, and because we don't have, you know, government stocks and we don't mandate minimum stock levels for industry, we've basically just left it all to the market to say, well, you guys take care of it. We haven't figured out what we're going to do if something does go wrong. So we're prepared to put $30 billion a year into the defence budget in this country as insurance for what's relatively low probability but a huge problem if something does go wrong. That's why we spend the money. But we're not prepared to do the same thing for things like fuel supplies. And that's crazy, because without fuel, the military can't work either.
So the government's plan is to hold this liquid fuel security review, which experts say is long overdue. But what's the plan from there?
Yeah, well, we don't really know. But even if the government does decide to rebuild our reserves, it could take us until 2026 to get up to that 90-day requirement.
2026, so that's 8 years away.
Yep, and with oil markets in meltdown as we speak, that may not be nearly soon enough. That's The Signal for today. If you do want to get in touch, it's thesignal@abc.net.au.
We'll be back in your feed tomorrow.
Bye.